Hey everybody, it's JT. What is on your holiday meal shopping list? Well, I would suggest Painted Hills Natural Beef. It is some of the best beef in the world. And your friends and family will be thanking you for a long time if you serve Painted Hills Natural Beef for your holiday meals. And now you can buy it online just by going to PaintedHillsBeef.com. Use the code BBQNATION at checkout and save yourself 15% on your order. Give Painted Hills Natural Beef a place on your table this holiday season.
It's Barbecue Nation with JT on a Northwest Lifestyle Weekend. Now here's JT.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Nation. That would be the Barbecue Nation. I'm JT, along with my second-in-command producer, Dave.
That's howdy, him. Howdy, howdy.
We are high atop the radio world in the Turn It, Don't Burn It studios in Portland, and we welcome all of our affiliates on the Radio Northwest Network and the people in Texas, too. How's that? Have you ever heard of Smokehouse Restaurants, Smokehouse Tavern, Smokehouse Provisions, Kim Jong Smokehouse? I love that name. Well, in studio today, we've got the boss and the creator of those, BJ Smiths, with us. BJ's also a reality television star. Starred.
Contestant.
Contestant.
How about contestant?
Yeah, we could start our own little therapy group here in Portland.
Yeah, right.
People who have been on reality TV and like didn't go all the way. Anyway, music this week from our friend Billy Joel back east. So let's get back to BJ. How are you? First of all, like we said off the air, it's a surprise we haven't met before, but
I'm also surprised we haven't met before, and it's probably because I'm crazy busy.
Yeah.
You know, just keeping four restaurants afloat and, you know, keeping all those businesses going as well as my traveling around cooking and doing events and
sure.
stuff like that. I have a pretty full plate.
Literally. I got to ask you, Kim Jong,
mm-hmm.
how did you come up with that? Was that just a...
You know, it was kind of started out as I wouldn't say forced partnership, but we had a friend who's my business partner, Earl, that has Langbon and Putty and Hot Yaw restaurants here in Portland, had a restaurant called Common Law in Pine Street Market. And the concept just didn't really do what they wanted it to. So Earl came to Han, that has Kim Jong Grilling, and myself, mm-hmm. and asked us independently if we'd be interested in doing something with him in the market.
Sure.
Both of us were really busy, and, you know, I couldn't tackle another concept on my own, so we just combined forces. So that's where the name came from. It was the Kim Jong grilling part is the Kim Jong, and then Smokehouse from the Smokehouse restaurants.
Yes.
And it really, you know, we did some testing in the original, you know, recipe testing, those flavors of, really classic Korean cooking
mm-hmm.
that's normally just grilled or braised work amazingly well being smoked.
Sure.
And it's really funny. Have you seen Ugly Delicious yet on
no.
Netflix?
No.
David Chang does a big piece on how nobody's doing American-style barbecue with Korean flavors. And I was like, wait, we've been doing that for the last 2 years here in Portland.
I thought maybe you were getting into geopolitical situations. Or,
No, not at all. Just flavor situations.
Flavors, yeah.
And so, you know, the Kim Jong Smokehouse thing really was just a marrying of our two concepts.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
Yeah, it's gone great.
Okay, let's do a little historical stuff here. How did you get all involved and how did you first start learning to cook? And I know you went to... WCI out here for a while.
I did, yeah.
And that. But really, no offense to anybody that's going to a culinary institute, but you really earn your bones when you get out and really get your hands dirty.
Absolutely. And, you know, I was asked to come do a talk at a culinary school, and I actually turned it down because I would advise people kind of not to go.
Yeah.
I think the money is better spent going and working for free for a really good chef, you know, in a good city like LA, Chicago, New
sure.
York, and, you know, even Portland these days, and spend that money on your rent and housing mm-hmm. and being able to feed yourself while learning from a talented chef. And that's kind of the way to go. You want me to start the way back?
Well, as far as back as you can remember.
Well, my parents owned restaurants when I was a kid. I grew up in South Bend, Indiana,
mm-hmm.
and my parents owned a Coney Island hot dog restaurant pretty close to the Notre Dame campus in South Bend. So I spent my whole childhood cooking in the kitchen there.
Yeah.
My parents, when I was in fifth grade, moved to Reno, Nevada. I just loved cooking my whole life. My grandmother was a Polish immigrant. I grew up, you know, making pierogies and stuff with her. And, you know, growing up in the state of Nevada, the school system there is amazing because the casinos pay for
a lot.
I think they pay for all of it, to be honest with you. Yeah. I'm not sure, but we had some really great vocational schools there. And my junior and senior year of high school, I actually attended a vocational culinary school for half of my day. So 0 through 4th period was a 4.5 hour culinary class. And I did it again my senior year and then just, you know, really fell in love with it. And 2 weeks after I graduated from high school, I moved to Portland, Oregon, 95 and attended Western Culinary.
Sure.
Graduated late 1996 and then just did the gamut of Portland restaurants forever. I spent most of my years, 3.5, close to 4 years at Paley's Place from 1998 to 2001 or two. Did some staging in New York and Los Angeles, you know, just all fine dining, right?
Sure, sure.
And then, you know, I worked for some really great chefs. I had some really great positions. And then I moved into the more corporate side of things. I ran all of the Papa Haydn restaurants for a couple of years and then worked for Sage Hospitality, and opened a couple of restaurants for them and, you know, worked their concepts and did that stuff. And then just kind of realized that I had no life. And, you know, barbecuing was something that I always enjoyed doing on my days off that I had very little of back then. But it was something we would, you know, make for family meal a lot. And it was just something I was becoming more and more passionate about as the years went on and the fine dining plating food with tweezers and, you know, keeping up with the most current trends and, you know, going to work at 8 o'clock in the morning and walking out of there at 1 in the morning and halfway through the day, my blood pressure is through the roof because I'm so stressed out because the cooks aren't doing exactly what I want them to. I realized I'm going to have a heart attack by the time I'm 45 if I don't, you know, switch things up. So then that kind of hobby and love affair that I had with barbecue turned into what I have now.
Well, that's a good story. And I do agree with you. I think some of the best training you probably got and we don't know each other really, but started with grandma, you know, because they tell you those little things that were passed down and, or they would say, you know, your Aunt Mildred did this, but it never really worked. I do it this way or, you know, vice versa, what have you. But all those little tips, I think, when you're starting to learn to cook, get you to start to think about extra things and tweaking and that. I mean, is that your thought too? Or
well, that and work ethic and patience. Yes. I think that's what I really learned. My foundation that I learned from my grandmother was we're going to do this for a long time. And some things you're going to need to be patient with. And yes, of course, like the tweaking and all that stuff. But I think I learned work ethic more than anything.
Yeah, I just, you know, my mom was an excellent cook. I had a couple of aunts that were very good. And then I had some aunts that couldn't boil water. But that was fine because you learned kind of what not to do with them. Off the air, I'll tell you about a cream peas and potato story, how much arrowroot to use, you might say. But I think getting that home touch, you know, basis, really makes people want to go out and you know, learn more, read more about it, read different cookbooks, train with people depending on how far you want to go with this. You know, I think that's a really good idea. It works pretty well. We're going to go into another break here in about 1 minute. So before we do that, I want to tease you and say when we come back, we are going to talk about learning how to smoke, and I don't mean Marlboros, but learning how to do that, because that's not something in some of the institutes, they don't cover a lot of that.
Oh, yeah. And I'm happy to tell you my journey of actually learning how to do barbecue.
Sure. we'll swap stories. Well, we're going to take a break here on Barbecue Nation. David, is that okay with you? Okay. That's the little sign he gives me.
Okay.
Okay. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. Don't go away. We're talking with BJ Smith. of the Smokehouse fame here today, and you're going to want to listen to every word this man has to say. Hey, welcome back to Barbecue Nation here on the Radio Northwest Network. I'm JT along with Dr. Dave, and we've got BJ Smith with us, owner and executive chef. I'm looking at my notes so I don't say it wrong. Smokehouse Tavern, Smokehouse Provisions, Kim Jong Smokehouse. It still makes me laugh. You went through, of course, Western culinary. You get your hands dirty out in the real world. What's your greatest pleasure now? I mean, you're a busy guy. You're leaving after this to go back east, but...
Oh, my God. My greatest pleasure in life now?
Yeah, or as far as the food and the restaurants go.
You know, to be honest with you, I have kind of, when I do some of these events that I leave to go do are barbecue focused. Mm-hmm. And what I really like doing now is the more fancy stuff because I don't get to do it anymore.
Right.
So I'm in Houston the 3rd through the 6th doing an event called Indie Chefs Week where I get to play around and, you know, do the kind of more playful, creative sure. stuff that yeah. is swimming around in my head that wouldn't make any sense at all for me to do in the restaurants.
Right.
But, you know, people love to come and eat it at these fancier food events. So that's really fun for me for that creative outlet these days.
So let's talk about your journey in the world of smoking meats and mm-hmm. vegetables, what have you. Did your family barbecue when you were a kid? I mean...
No, not at all. Even, you know, growing up in Indiana, barbecue wasn't a big thing there. And the barbecue sure. that we had was, you know, my mom putting a piece of pork butt with some barbecue sauce in a crock pot and turning it on overnight, right? It wasn't barbecue.
Never saw the coals, so to speak.
No. And, you know, for a long time, you know, barbecue, when I opened Smokehouse 21 in 2011, wasn't this big thing that it is now, right? There was not a lot of fancy barbecue chefs and... You know, a lot yes. of well-known cooks out there. And of course, there were in the South, but definitely not in Oregon. So a lot of it for me was just trial and error, I guess. And I wasn't really exposed to really good barbecue until around the time that I was opening my first place.
Did you, your formal training and then your, I call it homeopathic training, at you know, learning from grandmas to just people you worked with mm-hmm. before, how has that kind of rendered itself through in your barbecue styles?
Well, I think my classical French cooking training actually worked against me when uh-huh. I don't know if it was ego or what, but going into it, it's like, okay, sure, I can do this. No problem. I'll read a few recipes. I'll smoke this off. It's going to be great. Well, as you know, it's not that easy.
Nope.
You know, I have the pleasure of knowing quite a few, you know, really great barbecue cooks that over the years give me a hard time and tell me I just need to find my inner redneck and forget all of this classical French training that
tats.
I have.
You got some tats. Well, there.
Yeah. So a lot of I kind of had to relearn some cooking when it came to barbecue.
Right.
You know, a lot of the things that I've been taught. You know, the rules of cooking things just don't apply to barbecue, and it's a completely different thing altogether.
Right.
And what I thought was going to be very, very easy in the beginning turned out to, turned into me actually not making great barbecue. And then I had to obsess about it and learn how to, you know, really do it right.
You know, most of our redneck friends wouldn't, if you allow me that, wouldn't probably think of it in this way, but there's a lot of science to it.
Mm-hmm.
They grew up doing this the way dad and grandpa or mom and grandma, whoever taught them, especially my friends in the South and in Texas, you know, family recipes, a lot of them are phenomenal, but that's the way they did it. That's the way they always did it. They learned that. But now it's been,
broken down. I mean, Meathead Goldwyn's a big contributor to the show, and his book is the science of it. And if you read it, it makes a lot of sense. Of course, you know, for guys like us, we can kind of skim it. But what I'm saying is, it's not as easy as it looks. I'm stammering around trying to find the right words, but it's not as easy as it looks, as you found out.
Well, and there's nowhere to hide. It's just a piece of meat.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, you know, being classically French cook trained, you know, you have dishes with 5-6 different components, and those components have 5 or 6 ingredients. You know, there's a little bit of room to hide, but if you just, all you have is a slab of meat in front of you.
Yes.
Yes. You can't put a little bit of more of this or more of that on there to make it taste good.
I always said sauces can hide a lot of evils, but not so much in barbecue.
What's your feeling about sauce?
For people, their personal preference. Mm-hmm. You know, I like to, not on my briskets or anything like that, but on ribs, I'll put a little glaze on them right at the end, but very lightly. And if I know my guests and they don't like it, I won't put it on at all. But I think people should be able to use it at their own leisure.
Sure.
Because some people really love it. That's the barbecue they grew up with. Like your mom in a crock pot with, you know, a bottle of Kraft sauce in there, and that was barbecue.
That's good stuff, though.
And if they like it, more power to them. But you can't take it off once you put it on, so to speak.
Totally.
You know?
Yep.
So I kind of just do it very lightly when I do it, and then let everybody make their own judgment. What about you?
I prefer Texas style.
Yeah.
I just dry rubbed and smoked, but I like to have sauce available.
Yes.
And I do like different sauces for different things. And ribs, I prefer to put a little sauce on ribs, but at the restaurants, we just do them dry.
Right.
But we, you know, we have all the sauces on the tables.
Yeah. Well, if I was in the restaurant business again, I would do it that way because, first of all, if you got a sauce and if it's not labeled properly, you know, like, Lily Lips, medium, you know, you bet your ass type thing. And as far as heat factors go, if you put that on somebody's ribs or somebody's brisket or whatever, and if they can't take the heat, like my wife, you know, anything over about 4 on the Scoville thing, she's like, you know, so I don't want to make those judgments for people.
Right.
I don't want to presume it.
Right.
And that really can ruin their barbecue experience to me. So I'm kind of with you. You know, I love the dry rubs. I love doing the low and slow, as you will, and all that, kind of the classic style. But, you know, people have different ideas, different thoughts on it, and that's fine. More the merrier is what I'm thinking. What's the biggest thing you've learned really quick? What do we got, about 30 seconds? Yeah.
The biggest thing I've learned with barbecue is, like you were just saying, everyone has their preconceived notion of what barbecue should be.
Right.
And it's literally impossible to make everyone happy with barbecue because everyone has a preference either where they grew up or how their mom made it. And it's just so regional in the United States that I feel like what I've learned the most is I have to cook the barbecue that I think is the best.
Yeah.
And then hope that people enjoy it.
Yeah, I think so too. Hey, we're going to take a break. We're going to be back with BJ Smith here. Very famous chef. He's going to be. I think you already are. Here on Barbecue Nation. Welcome back to Barbecue Nation. JT here with Dr. Dave and BJ Smith. I'd like to thank a couple of our affiliates, KNPW down in Eugene and KVI News 570 in Seattle, both of them on the Radio Northwest Network. How's the market been? Has it been receptive for you with all your projects here?
You know, the Portland restaurant market, like other cities like San Francisco, New York, Chicago, I mean, it's very oversaturated. It's really, really, really hard to keep yourself relevant in the food scene. I spend a lot of time strumming up reasons for people to revisit my restaurant.
Sure.
And, you know, the restaurant business is a fickle, fickle thing. So to answer your question, you know, things are good, but you've got to work really hard to keep them up there, you know?
Yes. Well, and especially, I think, because you're actually in the Metroplex, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a lot of restaurants, if you go out a little further out of town, a lot of restaurants that have been there for 50 years or longer, and it's their consistency, and they make great handmade milkshakes or whatever the deal is. But I think Portland is a little more competitive, too, where if you don't always come up with that new edge a little bit, you know, it can be the same pulled pork, it can be the same brisket, but or Chinese food or whatever it is, it doesn't matter. But very competitive here because there's always the newest, the latest, the greatest.
Exactly. And I think Portland went from a place or everywhere where people would say, oh, this place is great. It's been here for 10 years.
Yes.
You know, the place would have patina and you know that it's going to be good and you've always had great. Well, now that place is passe and people mm-hmm. want to go to that hot new place that's been around for
yeah.
2-3 weeks that might only make it 6 months.
Yeah.
But people want to, oh man, this is so not PC, but I don't care.
it's okay.
I think the restaurant world is turning into people would rather go to a place so they can brag to their friends that they went to than a place where they know they're going to absolutely get a great meal.
Yes.
And so a person like myself having, you know, a very good example at Smokehouse Tavern, I do a Taco Tuesday event where every other month I fly in a guest chef.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that's fun. It's fun for us because we get to play around a little bit. And it's really great because we remind our customers that we're here and we're doing cool stuff. So,
yeah.
You know, without those things, I feel like, unfortunately, in today's restaurant market, you can't just have good food and good service and a good environment and expect to survive. You got to put a little bit more into it than that.
When you're serving, I mean, tell us about how, like at Smokehouse, how do you serve? And what I mean is, for our listeners who haven't been there, is it a great big platter or do they choose their sides or do you mix and match the sides for them or kind of give us your thought process?
So for the last 8 years, we've probably tried 5 or 6 different ways of offering barbecue to people.
Sure.
Started out classic Texas style. You pick your meat, your 2 sides. This is how much it costs. There you go. Right. Then, you know, through my traveling everywhere I go, I eat a ton of barbecue and I loved going to places where everything was a la carte, where mm-hmm. there was just a quarter half and pound price for everything. And then sides were a la carte. Cause I want to try everything.
Sure.
We tried that model in Portland and it failed miserably because people were just so confused and they didn't understand. And it's because there's not real barbecue culture here, right?
Right.
In Texas, it makes sense because,
yep.
I mean, people go, I mean, barbecue's like church, right?
They go with like takeout, like McDonald's.
Totally.
You know?
Totally. So now we're back to where we started out in 2011. Where now we actually have a platter. You pick your meat, your 2 sides, you get some white bread, some pickles, and then sauces on the table.
Sure.
And that seems to be the tried and true, what everyone's happy with. And what, you know, I opened Smokehouse Provisions in Vancouver last year, and we started out with an a la carte menu. And all the customers were very confused and wanted to know what everything came with. They're like, what does this come with? What does this come with?
And you can have big letters, the a la carte. And
it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. And I get it. You know, it's not their fault. As a restaurateur and a person that's spent their entire life in a restaurant, it's hard to sometimes put yourself in the customer's shoes, right?
Because
what makes sense for me and what I'm trying to, you know, give to my guests isn't always easy for them to understand. And people don't want to go out to eat and have to do math and think sometimes.
No. Thinking's no good.
That's why I go out to dinner.
Yeah.
Yeah, the thing is done for you, right?
Yeah.
I know there's about once or twice a week anymore I'm, like, because I do most of the cooking at our house, you know, like, my wife will come through the door and say, we're going out, you know, because you get tired. You don't want to think. You don't want to do it. It's nice if somebody serves you
once
in a while.
It's always better when somebody else makes it.
Yeah,
yep. Even if you can make it better, it's still better if somebody else makes it.
That's true. Because you can just kind of sit there and enjoy it.
Exactly.
You know, I know when I cook at home and even when we're having guests and stuff, I'm always fidgeting. You know, everything's on the table, but I'm still running back to the refrigerator for something or I'm still.
Oh, yeah. I can't relax even at home. Yeah. If I'm cooking brunch for friends or my girlfriend and family, I No, I can't even eat. By the time we go to eat, I'm.
You know, people think I'm weird. We do these huge dinners at the holidays or what have you, big barbecues. Excuse me. When everything is ready, call them. You know, they come in. They're getting their plates. They're doing whatever. I go outside and have a smoke. Yes, people, I smoke. You know, but and not just briskets. But I'll go kind of sit and hide, and let them. You know, go around if it's being served buffet style or whatever, mm-hmm. get their plates at the table. I'm always the last guy to sit down, and I'm always the first guy up.
Yep.
You know, like that. But it's like, and you're correct, because after you've done all this, you've cooked all this, blah, 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 you've got all that sensory stuff going on, you know, and you've tasted sauces or what have you, I'm not hungry.
No. And I kind of just want a break and a minute to myself. Yeah. And I think my grandma was the same way. My mom was the same way. I think it's just inherent in cooks.
Yeah. I know my mom was always the last one to sit down at the table.
Mm-hmm.
And usually the first one, unless she was mad at my dad, then I was the first one to leave. But, but yeah, it was, I don't know. I guess, you know, you get overwhelmed with all the smells and the tastes. And
well, and then just tasting the food the entire time. You know, I think that's the most important thing for young cooks and even home cooks and people. You have to taste everything all the time, nonstop.
Yeah.
So by the time it's time to eat,
you've already eaten. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a tough deal. Okay, I've got a couple silly questions for you.
Hit me.
Well, this one's not too silly. What barbecue skill took you the longest to master?
Brisket. Smoking brisket.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even say that I've mastered it yet. I don't know anybody that would say they've mastered brisket yet. It's a fickle beast.
Yeah, it is. And you can always end up with, as they say in the breakfast business, you can always end up with a dog pancake. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
One of them's going to go in the trash at least once a year. What is your best day? We got 2 minutes here. What is your best day contain for activities, BJ, outside of the restaurant business, if there is such a day?
Honestly, what I enjoy the most these days is a lazy day at home.
Yeah.
My girlfriend has a 5-year-old, so I absolutely enjoy hanging out with my girlfriend or kid, and we relax and make food and chill out. That is an ideal day for me these days.
You remember what the first thing was you ever grilled or smoked or barbecued?
The ribs. Ribs is what my obsession started with. And then, of course, it moved on to brisket.
Yeah. What's the worst place you ever had to cook?
Oh, man. I've cooked at for events. The worst place I ever had to cook was in Charleston doing Top Chef, because it was a crazy experience.
Yeah.
The worst, like event or kitchen?
Yeah,
Well, I will tell you that one of the worst places I cooked was at McCready's in Charleston. They have an upstairs catering kitchen that I think George Washington actually cooked in this kitchen. It was so old, and that nothing worked, and there was all this pressure and a room not much bigger than this, you know, maybe a 10 by 10 with 14 people in it. That was probably one of my worst cooking experiences ever.
There you go. Dumbest thing you've ever seen done with a grill or a smoker.
I'll tell you the dumbest thing I've ever seen, and I did it myself.
Okay.
It was the first time I did brisket. Me trying to be fancy was I smoked the brisket for 4 hours, and then I sealed it in a bag with barbecue sauce and sous vide it overnight.
Oh, really?
And it was...
How'd that work out?
Not great.
Oh, okay.
Not great. Yeah, me trying to be fancy.
Yeah. That's the other thing. You can't really be too fancy with
this. No.
Anyway, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back and wrap up Barbecue Nation with BJ Smith here. Dr. Dave and myself after this. Hey, welcome back to Barbecue Nation. We are very fortunate to have BJ Smith with us here today. You know, we were talking off about burning chicken and stuff when we were off there. How many recipes do you concoct? Not that you're burning chicken, but then you say, okay, we're not going to use this one. Or, you know, you've got your basics, but do you put any variables in them over time?
I mean, I think that there's a constant evolution of all of the all of the recipes. Yeah. I mean, we do have stuff that's very standardized, like the barbecue sauces. Things,
sure.
Things don't change. The meat in particular is it's constantly changing on like a weekly basis. And that's just variances with the actual meat itself. So I thought when I got into barbecuing that it would be something easy. You can just make a standardized recipe, do this, put it in here for this long, set the temperature. This is when it's done, right? But it's just not that way. As
no.
So the meat is a constant evolution. You know, we just last week, actually, we're going back and forth from, is it better to use fresh cracked black pepper or actual, you know, like table, like right. ground pepper.
Ground pepper.
And that was a, you know, as a classically trained French cook, I would never think to use that. But in a recent trip to Houston, I had some really great barbecue and was talking to the owner of the restaurant, and he swore by just using the fine mesh pepper, and I actually liked it more.
Yeah.
It has a better texture. It has a little tooth to it. So to answer your question, yeah, I don't ever think it's good enough, and I don't ever think that we're ever going to get to a point where it's like, okay, we've nailed it.
Yeah. See, that's somebody that knows what they're doing and is quality in their cooking is when you're always kind of, you know, do you use sea salt? Do you use table salt? Do you use, like you were saying about the peppers, do you use powdered ginger, ground ginger, whatever it is,
right.
You're always kind of playing with it.
Mm-hmm. It's just a constant evolution with the, you know, with the wood, you know,
yes.
Sometimes it's really hard for us to find wood that's dry enough. And then we have to adjust things on our end as well. So it's just a constant evolution, which makes it really fun, but also a lot of work.
At the Smokehouse Tavern, do you just cook an allotment, like 5 briskets a day or whatever? It doesn't matter.
At all of the restaurants, we cook as much as we can, basically.
Yeah.
Anything that's left over, you know, if we have briskets left over, we turn it into
chili or something.
Chili and stuff like
yeah.
that. But we don't have smoking facilities that, you know, are ideal. So
yeah.
we cook what we can. And you know, a lot of times we run out. And that's what a lot of people don't understand. If you show up at 9 o'clock, you know, you might not get brisket. And you're definitely not going to get burnt ends.
Yes.
And a lot of people that don't understand barbecue culture, that's a good thing. That means that we're not cooking it and stocking up on
right.
it. That means it's fresh and it's good. You just have to get there earlier.
I think it's taken the Northwest and especially the Portland area a while to start to latch on to that concept that, you know, this isn't a 12-ounce ribeye or something. You know, and they can just...
You can't just go open another can of brisket.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It just doesn't work that way.
Doesn't work that way.
You know, it's not like Doritos. We'll make more. It's just, you got what you get every day.
Yeah, it takes us 14 hours for our whole process, and we're out, we're out.
BJ, where do you see yourself 20 years from now?
Hopefully retired.
Yeah.
You know, I've been cooking since I was 15 years old. I'm 41 now. I notice it. It's hard for me even these days when I have to fill in shifts and work the line and stuff. I don't move as well as I used to. My knees and back hurts. I would love to eventually, you know, hopefully open a few more restaurants and sell them and retire. That would be the ultimate dream.
That would be great, but I bet you end up with 35 years from now, you'll be out someplace and running this little cafe that's only open from noon to 4 or something.
That also sounds great.
And it has a good bar in the back.
Right, yes. Yeah. Very important with a lot of bourbon.
A lot of bourbon.
Like yes.
Mine would be scotch, but that's okay.
That's all right. We'll have a bottle of scotch there for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, we can do that. Well, we got about a minute left. Tell us what you're doing now. You're leaving? You're going back east?
I'm leaving tomorrow Texas. Morning to go to New York. To do a cooking demo at MoMA and then cook with a good friend of mine that I was on Top Chef with, Sylvia's restaurant, Lorina in Brooklyn. And then I go to Delaware to the DuPont family estate to do a Meals on Wheels event. And then I fly to Houston, Texas to do an event called Indie Chefs Week. So pretty busy for the next few weeks.
Good for you. Good for you. And you're going to go home, David, and burn a chicken?
Absolutely.
I wish you a lot of luck.
Thanks. Appreciate that.
You can buy chicken in a can.
Yeah, thanks.
So, BJ, if people want to find out more about the restaurants, how can they find it in your websites and stuff?
SmokehouseTavernPDX.com, SmokehouseProvisions.com, and KimJongSmokehouse.com are all of our websites, and all of our information, menus, all that good stuff is on there.
And it's not had nothing to do with North Korea?
Absolutely nothing.
Okay. All right. Thank you, my friend. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.